Hi everybody, welcome to the Infinite Potential Podcast, episode 4. On this episode we had conscious entrepreneur, shaman and all-round top guy Mark John Brown. Currently living in Scotland, he's travelled all over the world, hitchhiking across Europe and South America, where he had a bit of a spiritual awakening in Argentina. We cover all this, we also cover where we think the world is moving to, in the crypto markets, and conscious business overall. I think you can get a lot from this episode. Please share it, please follow us on Facebook and Instagram, and subscribe to us on iTunes. Thank you very much for listening. Oh, yeah, Mark, how are you doing, buddy?
Very well, man. Very well. Good. Feeling good.
Good. Tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So, I guess, how much do I say? Born into a kind of socially challenged environment as a youngster. Brought up in that kind of environment as well. Obviously, that came with its challenges and its tests. By the age of like 11, I'd met the best friends of my teenage years, my childhood. They were from South America. By the age of 12, English has opened my mind completely, man, because when you learn a language to perfection, you cannot separate language and culture. So if you want to learn a language to perfection, you must absorb at least some of the culture, man. And so I moved into their cultural patterns and ways of living in many ways. I lived with one of them for like a year. All of that completely blew my mind open to like new experiences and new cultures, and wow, just filled me with awe and inspiration and curiosity, which is something that I still have today in life. That drove me to then go traveling through South America. I was drawn to South America, planned to stay only 6 months. Didn't stay 6 months. I blasted all my cash that I'd saved up over after only about 4 months, but even still went through this huge spiritual awakening whilst I was in South America and just decided I didn't need money to remain there. And I ended up staying there for the best part of 2 years. I hitchhiked through Chile, Bolivia, into Peru. I was doing street shows in the traffic lights. If anybody's been to South America, you'll know what I'm talking about, man. Just doing like street acrobatics in the traffic lights and running around the cars with a hat to kind of get donations from the drivers. And also I learned to make macrame bracelets, necklaces, and hair like braid thing. No, what do you call them? Trenzas in Spanish. I don't know how to say it in English. So that was my way of living over there. But when it all changed when I got to Peru, because I met the woman who 3 months later would become my wife. I married a woman. Yeah, it was very quick, man. Yeah. Married her after 3 months. She is an indigenous Peruvian of the Quechua lineage, descended from the Incas themselves, man. So married her after 3 months and went on a big, crazy adventure. We've traveled South Korea, China, Malaysia. We've gone through turmoil with immigration issues and had to be split up for like, you know, long periods of time. And in those periods of time, of course, my adventurous spirit didn't keep me pinned down. I hitchhiked twice through Europe. I made it from Berlin to Edinburgh in 3 days hitchhiking. And then the second time around, I went and I bought myself a big 2.9 meter didgeridoo in Lübeck in the north of Germany. I hitchhiked all the way back with a 2.9 meter didgeridoo. And my way of coaxing truckers into giving me lifts was just to play, sorry, I'll put my phone on silent, was just to play them didgeridoo music, man, and enchant them like the fairy flute player, you know. I was playing my didgeridoo for these truck drivers and they would like be coaxed into giving me a lift, man. And that trip took me 3.5 days to make it back from Lübeck in the very far north of Germany. Yeah, man, and our trips through Asia brought us much fun, much adventure, and the surprise of becoming pregnant. So that was where I found out that I was going to become a dad, and life really, really began to transform. I'd already become a qualified interpreter and translator of Spanish Spanish and English. So I was like servicing public sector organizations like NHS, the public health service, courtrooms, tribunals, hospitals, doctors' clinics. I also did telephone interpreting. So I was like those TV programs that show border control and then they have to use an interpreter over the phone. I've been that interpreter. I've also been telephone interpreter for US public services and US prison services. That was pretty mental, man. My first interpreting assignment on the phone was for a Mexican gangster who was being imprisoned, and I had to take him through his whole medical examination and stuff like that. And that just the content of conversation that I had to interpret there, you know, who he needed to stay away from, what would happen if he saw him, you know, all that gory stuff, man. So yeah, when I like became when I found out I was going to become a dad, I was already in this position, and it was my translation work that allowed me the life of a digital nomad, allowed me to go traveling through South Korea, China, and Malaysia. But when my daughter was born, man, just this big firework up my ass, man. Entrepreneurship, like it really opened up. I was already self-employed and quite free, but like I wanted to play. I just felt like I have this fucking huge purpose, man. And now I could hear the voices of society in my head telling me parenthood is the end of your life. You know, like all your adventures must end when you become a parent. And I was like, well, fuck that. That's not my story. You know, that's not my story. If I want to be a dad and still achieve my dreams, I will do so. But what that's going to require of me is to up my financial game and educate myself financially and, you know, build my acumen and my prowess in the world of business and money making. I did it the hard way, man. You know, I ended up in 50 grand of debt. I'm talking credit cards and loans, man, like high interest debt. It separated me from my wife and my daughter. We were living in two separate cities for 7 months, man. It was absolutely hellish. I also, obviously, from the challenging background that I had, I was like this. It was like sticking, like having a cup of water with mud in the bottom. All of that just stuck a stick in it and swirled all the shit up and brought it all up. So had to deal with all of that, like trauma and psychological shit and social conditioning and family conditioning and shit during the hardest time. What has been the hardest time of my life, man. Involved in property, like I've launched multiple businesses, which I'll probably save you the earload on. I won't go into detail on them all, but I'm heavily involved in the world of property. Nowadays, I run serviced apartments in both Edinburgh and Kirkcaldy. I also invest successfully in cryptocurrencies. That was the big game changer for me last year, actually, which really like fully liberated me. That was the kind of big push for me in 2017. What else to do? Yeah, I'm involved with a network marketing company as well. It's a nutritional cleansing company, but right at this moment, I don't have it. Like, I don't feel it as my priority to be building business with that. I'm just really enjoying using the products and just like, cleansing myself. And actually, that was using that system was the start of serious structure being implemented in my life, which then brought about serious change. And now I am where I am. I feel fucking amazing. One thing I didn't mention is that I'm also initiated in shamanism, man. I trained for 2 years with a Brazilian shaman and her Scottish husband. They gave me my initiation. And since 2011, I have worked with tribes from Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, Brazil, English shamans, Scottish shamans, drinking ayahuasca. I've been doing that since September 2011. It's been quite a game changer in my life as well. And I mean, 2012, I was drinking it. Like I was in medicine ceremonies like one weekend every single month for like 7 months straight, man. Then I had a 1 month break, and then I went again after that 1 month break with a different shaman, and that opened up so many floodgates for me. I do feel that a big part of my life is offering my shamanic abilities, insights to the people. So that's what I am, man. That's what I am. And it feels
that's an interesting, tricky. Interesting life, man. That's more than most people have done in the 70, 80 years, that is. You've done it in 30 years, whatever you are, but that's fascinating.
I'm 28, man, yeah. 28. I'll be 29 in June, yeah.
It's that beard you've got, mate. I thought you were older than that. Sorry.
Nah, it's all good. It's all good. Years of wisdom.
Tell us a little bit about the... when you started learning shamanism, was that when you went to Peru originally? Is that when you started learning, or was it when you more recently than that?
I mean, in short, the spiritual awakening came about in Argentina in 2008, I think it was. I met this what we can call a white witch, like a seer. She could see, you know, she could see the whole timeline of my soul's journey from, well, not from start to finish, because start and finish don't really exist in the depth of truth. But like she could see, I think she told me she could see like five lifetimes before and five lifetimes in front. That's where it all began, because she just fucking blew my mind. I was stripped naked in front of her. You know, I was stripped naked, spiritually stripped naked. She could see every thing in my psyche that was tormenting me, like from my childhood and whatever. And she was giving me answers to that. Like, she was like, oh, you know, see this thing that you feel with this person from your family? Like, you know that they did that just because this, you know, and like, you should understand them. You know, she was just like counseling me based on what she could see, and wow, all that shit just blew my mind. Then I started to read, my very first kind of spiritual books were Brian Weiss, who is a psychiatrist, qualified psychiatrist, which means he has a degree in medicine. He's a doctor first and foremost of medicine. And then obviously he's specialized in psychiatry. Because of the nature of what this woman in Argentina was seeing and telling me, I just became fascinated in the concept of past lives. So I started to read Brian Weiss, who is a psychiatrist, like I said, and who stumbled upon past life regression accidentally in the treatment of one of his psychiatric patients. He was guiding her through regression therapy. Yeah. And he said these like key words. He like programmed her subconscious, or gave instructions to her subconscious or her soul or whatever you want to call it. He gave these instructions, these key instructions, after like multiple sessions where he's like, what the fuck, man? My profession is in question here, because I'm giving this girl like 16 sessions and we're not getting to the bottom of her issues here. Excuse me, her issues here. And the key words that he then used in changing up his instructions to her were, may there be no barriers in time or space, and take us to the root of this, you know, pathology. And she ended up in a life that was in like the 1800s or something. And he was just completely mind blown, man, as you would be. And he tried to understand it, you know, purely from a scientific perspective, using all of his psychiatric and, Western scientific principles and understandings. But you know, the more sessions that he was doing with this girl and seeing the results that he had on or this therapy had on her, the more he like began to believe it. And his philosophy was, fuck it, the results are astonishing and I need to publish this. People need to hear this. So he started to publish it. That was the start of my journey. Then as I hitchhiked through South America, in Bolivia, you know, in Chile and Argentina, yes, you can hitchhike quite easily. And it's kind of, it's almost got a bit of a Western feel to it, a European feel to it. Like truckers are just, you know, they're cool. They're kind of quite European in mindset. But when you get into Bolivia and Peru, man, the people like everything changes, man. They're all indigenous. They're all indigenous people, and they're of a very different mindset. And so, and they don't in Bolivia. They don't like truckers won't just pick you up. What happens is commercial trucks, when they're empty and not carrying a load, they give subsidized travel fees, basically, like subsidized travel for peasants to travel from city to city, town to town in the Andes, to like sell their produce in the next town. And that was where I had my first, I mean, my first real, I'm talking fucking real, like skin to skin contact with these people. Like I was just dunked in a pot of them, you know, like, and I had, you know, I would be traveling. And this connects in with your shamanism question, because shamanism is of indigenous root. And this is where my interest was stirred, you know. Like I'm like proper, I'll send you a photo, man. And maybe like you can, wherever you're going to publish this thing, you can put the photo up as well. Like I've got a photo of me in the back. Well, I'm just taking the photo, so you can't actually see me, but I've took the photo of the back of the truck, man. And it's like literally packed, like fucking packed with poor Bolivian people, man. And I'm in there with them, the only white man there, you know, like, and I'm like, oh, man, it's like the middle of the night. The journey's taken like 25 hours or something, you know, up the Andes, down the Andes, you know, and I'm just like trying to get comfy and stretch my legs out, man. And I've got this like little ancient Bolivian guy with fucking crooked hands sitting proper, like giving it big licks, chewing on all his coca leaves and like dribbling out the side of his mouth with like green saliva out the side of his mouth, you know, blind. And you can still hear me, yeah?
Yeah, go for it, man. Yeah, keep going.
And like every time I tried to stretch my feet out, it would be like my feet would like push onto him, you know? So uncomfy though. But I couldn't do it because every time he would just go boom, bat. He'd hit my feet, you know, like to say, get those feet off me, you know. He was blind. Didn't say a word either. Wasn't speaking to me. I imagine that he didn't speak Spanish anyway, because everybody around me was speaking Quechua. And so I had this pocket full of, you know, coca leaves that I'd bought somewhere. Oh, I can't remember where, but, and I just thought, you know, I'll try and make peace with this guy. And maybe he'll just let me stretch out so that I can actually get a proper sleep. You know, I can see that his coca leaves have now run out here. I'll just give him these, like. And I just tapped him on the shoulder and I said in Spanish, you know, aquí, señor, puede comer mis hojas. Aquí hay un paquete de hojas. Here's a packet of leaves for you. And he just felt it with his crooked hands, you know, ripped it out of my hand. And just he didn't even say a word. He didn't say a word to me, man. No thank you, no nothing. He just took it and just carried on chewing. And then I tried to stretch my feet out and again, bat! You know, very uncomfortable ride, man. But... long story short, man, that was the like first real contact, raw contact that I had with indigenous people. And I became very interested in their way of seeing things, man, and their way of seeing life and their way of living. And I'd known of this concept of shamanism just through the studies that I'd gone into in Argentina after my kind of awakening, so to speak. And it was just of great curiosity to me. And I remember when I was in Cusco, when I'd met my wife, like I was ignorant. I can remember the level of ignorance I had. I can clearly remember that level of ignorance, but the curiosity was so strong. And I was like going around the markets, the shamanic markets, and just like asking the vendors, like, what does this do? What is this for? You know, and learning in that way. That was the first thing. That was the first doorway to my view into the world of shamanism. And I also, when I was in Copacabana in Bolivia, camped out on the edge of Lake Titicaca, and I actually, from a trip, I'm getting two stories muddled up. One time I did saw out the side of the Andes my own San Pedro cactus, but this time I'd bought it at a local market because I just heard of this shamanic medicine, San Pedro. Again, ignorant, man. I was ignorant, and you know, I forgive the person that I was back then and the ignorance that I had. I took San Pedro on the edge of Lake Titicaca without actually having knowledge of how to open sacred space, of how to manage the energies of a ceremony properly, you know. And Whew, I mean, I'll just say to whoever's listening, don't do any of these plant medicines, you know, without sacred intent, man, because you will be in for an ass kicking, man. And yeah, I did take a serious ass kicking. But I had that piece of insight. That was a small piece of insight. When I got to Cusco, it was more about just going to the markets and asking, you know, what's this, what's that, what does this do? Where can I find a shaman? What does a shaman do? Just speaking with the local people, man. And that was it. Then I came home. I came back to Scotland. And it was in 2010. I was having I'd traced down the Edinburgh Shamanic Centre with Claudia Gonsalves and Mark Halliday, my two teachers. And I was very interested. I felt a great, great, great calling to train with them and to learn from them. But there was also apprehension, fear, and also just doing what we do when we're on this path, man, you know, experiencing all this chat of like, I've got too much going on in my life and I don't have enough time to dedicate to this and blah, blah, blah. All these excuses, man. And then my friend, Carolina, like from absolutely nowhere, just one day, you know, she was the channel from the universe that day. She just like, I just like sat on the side of my bed, got up from sleeping and sat on the side of my bed and picked up my phone. And all of a sudden a text came through just to, you know, it wasn't as if the text was waiting on me. Like as I picked up the phone and sat on the edge of the bed, the text came through, boom. And I opened the text and it was just this like big capital letters with exclamation marks at the end. You need to start your shamanic path! Exclamation mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark. And I was like, whoa, right. Yes, I need to start my shamanic path. and that's what happened, man, you know. So I went to Claudia and Mark, the Edinburgh Shamanic Centre, and I spent 2 years training with them, learning all sorts of shit, man, all sorts of ancient practices, including, energetic cleansing. I was supposed to be giving a healing this morning to somebody at 10 a.m., but my blocked nose, my tickly cough, I had a sore head, and I need to go deep with people when I work with them. You know, I need to get myself into that zone. And when not both of my nostrils are working properly, I can't use breathing techniques properly. So I postponed it. So I learned energetic healing, how to take people in trance states, how to get people into trance hypnotic states, take them and guide them into shamanic journeys to connect with their power animals, their higher spirits, depending on what they need, of course. And nobody except spirit itself dictates what is needed in any given session. So just whatever comes up in that session, I'll go with it and I'll bring it and I'll connect them with whatever spirits they need to be connected with and guide them in their communication with those spirits. Psychopomp work, which involves clearing spaces, clearing property, property and land of spirits, essentially. Learned how to do that, and I had a fucking massive during my initiation, I had to do like an assignment on psychopomp, and man, the assignment was mind-blowing. Fucking wow. I mean, I don't know if it's like too far out there for people so I was working in tandem with a classmate. We were both sent on an assignment to clear this like old garage area out, and like, so we're just like in shamanic headspace, like going around in this garage, clearing energies, just wherever we felt it. And then she stopped at this point, and she was just in silence. And then she like she had her eyes closed, and she looked around at me, and she just went, clicked her fingers, and says, "This one's for you. This is for you." I'm like, okay, cool. Went across, just like tuned into those energies, and like, wow, this spirit appears. It was a guy. It was sometime in like the 1800s. His name was Fred. He was wearing crocodile shoes. this was mind blowing for me, man. Of course, I was just in the zone, just totally in the shamanic zone. And when I came out of it, I was just like, whoa. And still to this day, I was like, whoa, what an initiation that was, man. He was kind of confused. He was confused because that's what That's what spirits are when they get stuck in, you know,
dimension,
just above 3D realm. Yeah, they're just confused. And that's also a note to people who, like, you know, are scared of spirits. Like, don't be scared of spirits, man, you know, because they're just like children, lost little children. And give them love and, you know, respect. And, you know, don't be scared. The horror movies and Hollywood fills our head with so much shit around spirits and stuff like that, man. Jeez. But anyway, this guy, Crocodile Shoes, Fred was his name. He's confused about these people living in his house. Who the hell are these people? Where's my wife and daughter? This was a conversation I was having with him. Just total burning heart space connection with the spirit, man. And I was just having this conversation with him, and I had to take him through the whole process of explaining that he had been kind of trapped in time and space, that we were now in the year 2000 and whatever it was, 2013, I think it was, 12, 13. And his wife and daughter had already passed. Had this conversation with him. We connected so well, man. The crocodile shoes were because he loved reptiles and he kept reptiles at the property. And he received so much stick from the local police. Like, he'd even received beatings from police and stuff because they were trying to, they'd like ostracized him from society because this was weird. It was seen as like some kind of witchcraft shit that he was into. Like, all the local neighbors were against him. The police tried to force him to stop keeping reptiles at his home. He told me this whole story, man. and then eventually, like, it was time, you know, we'd connected. I'd alleviated the worries that he had and made him understand the situation. So just opened up the light for him to pass through. And what happened when I opened up the light? His fucking wife and daughter were there.
Wow.
Yeah, man. Full of ecstasy. Like, wow, you know, like, imagine just not seeing your loved one for fucking literally lifetimes. And Fred got all excited and he started to travel up. But he like stopped and turned back and he wanted to take me with him. He was like, come, I really, like, he was ecstatic. He wanted to introduce me to his wife and his daughter. You know, there is a key moment right there. And this was my fucking initiation assignment, man. That's a key moment. Because if I could say to him, okay, I'm going with you. Let's go. I want to meet your wife. But that would mean that I would need to leave my physical body. And essentially I would reach death.
No, you know?
Yeah. Mm. So I just kept held my ground as burning the love was that I felt. Like, I really felt connected to this guy and just, you know, when you work in such realms, like, it is such a heart space, man. And same with healing. Like, love heals all, man. Like, you cannot work from anywhere other than your heart when you're in that space. You know, it was quite a seductive energy, just so much bathed in love. But I held my own and I just said, you know, I just explained to him, dude, it's not my time yet, but I will see you at some point. Like, I promise, you know, we will see each other again. Off you go, you know. Blessed be your journey. And off he went, man. And I closed up the space and it was just like, whoo, whoo. What a fucking assignment, man. And yeah, my shamanic teachers were very happy with that. Very happy with the work I'd done and whatever. So that was part of my shamanic training. What else, man? Oh, of course, extraction work. Extraction, which essentially can be classed as exorcism.
Okay. So is that like dark spirits on a human, like, yeah?
Low, high density, low vibration energies and entities in the human body, which happens a lot, by the way, a lot more than people fucking...
Yeah, I can imagine. So, you know, like, schizophrenia and that sort of thing, is there a lot of that, that sort of, you know, spirits and whatever else? They haven't just lost the plot.
That's it, exactly. Well, and this is the... This is where I feel that I have a purpose in this world today, because I do feel like, and don't ask me how right now, because I actually don't have the answers right now, but I know that at some point in my life, I will have the answers. And that's what I'm working towards in one of the areas. That is one of the cups in my life that I'm in the process of filling, to be that bridge between Western science and indigenous wisdom, you know, excuse me. And, yeah, so where people get put into mental hospitals and are written off as like nut jobs and whatever, you know, in the shamanic world, they're seen as just having absorbed certain energies or having certain entities attached to them, and, you know, through however you want to see it, man, whether it is through the eyeballs of a shaman or the eyeballs of a Western person, like, shamanic work can remove that, you know, it can remove that. And yeah, like, I know it's a very controversial thing, because you've got, you know, certain people that don't want to kind of give any credit to such works, and it is in my cells, it is in my DNA, man. That is what I'm here to do, and I believe that's also why I am married to an indigenous Peruvian. You know, it started now. Like, there's like a prophecy that I put on my page not so long ago, something along the lines of, when white man learns indigenous ways, the world will heal. Yeah. You know, and I put that because it started to make sense to me. Like, I heard it, but I didn't really understand it fully, and now I began to understand it, because now I've been married for 8 years, 8.5 years to a indigenous Peruvian woman, and I've seen the effect that me, my white skin, and me being a gringo, a white man, has on my wife's family, and how I influence them heavily, because we are in a world that is completely fabricated by white man, by the Western world. So you've got, when we were in Korea and China, you've got, you know, it's like, it's a fucking everyday conversation amongst Korean girls. Oh, have you had your surgery yet? You know, have you had your surgery yet? What does that mean? Have you been in for plastic surgery to get your nose more westernized, and your eyes widened and your skin whitened to be more Western, you know, like, and the same kind of thing happens in Latin America. Everybody follows the adverts. Everybody follows the Western propaganda that is shoved down their throat. And that's why white man, a Western man, is in a place of higher reverence all over the world, essentially. And in Latin America, and in my case, Peru specifically, I'm seeing that people tend to pay more attention to me because I'm white, and it is of assumption that I have lots of money and, you know, no, the ways of life or no better, essentially, because I'm white, you know? And so, yeah, it's making sense. When white man learns indigenous wisdom, the world will heal. It's making sense to me now, because I'm seeing that I'm doing work to develop myself as a person, and I'm working to bring more harmony to people and planet. And so the fact that I'm having an influence on my wife's family is a fucking great thing, you know? We need more of this. We need more white people to, instead of infiltrating those lands with fucking rape, pillage, war, blood, guts, we need more white people now to be more respectful of their traditions, and not just respectful, but highly revering, and learn them and kind of birth them back into that society, which is what is happening. You know, like, my wife's family are primarily evangelistic, you know? But since me and my wife, especially me, obviously my wife met me, then she became interested in shamanism. Now she herself is a shamanic practitioner, and she's totally connected to her roots, her folklore. She leads a group of folklore dancers. She practices shamanism. She heals people. She facilitates healing in people. Let's just say she gives healing sessions. And since that's, like, happened, you know, I'm witnessing members of her family who were like strongly evangelistic before meeting me. They're now like opening up, and a perfect example. In fact, we went in summer 2016. We went to visit Hermano Vidal, who is actually forms an integral part of the documentary "The Shift of the Ages," which is led by Don Alejandro Perez Oxlack, El Errante. Wandering Wolf, who is an indigenous Guatemalan who's become part of the political sphere in Guatemala, which is, of course, great news. But we went to visit Hermano Vidal, who lives in Ollantaytambo in Peru. We took my wife's dad, my father-in-law, and and to witness my father-in-law feeling extremely elated and proud and really happy that me, that I, white man, was applauding and revering and lifting up the culture from which he originally comes. Oh my goodness. You could stick a singing bowl next to him and you'd hear it sing. Literally, he was glowing, you know, and we went to this Hermano Vidal, and Hermano Vidal was like being very harsh with all of us, actually, just like, you know, harsh in the sense that kind of really stamping home the fact that we all needed to be living from our roots. And so as he was giving a bit of stick to my father-in-law, he was like, you know, giving him some stick. You this, you that, you're caught up in the fucking modern rat race out there in Lima. You know, what about your roots? And one thing that he said, he says, do you speak Quechua? You know? And instantly, man, the change in body language and energy of my father-in-law, he sat up, he was like, yes, I speak Quechua, you know? And, ah, man, I mean, it brings tears to my eyes just to remember that, because, yeah, you know, I feel I've had a significant part to play in that, man. You know, like from him being exiled by globalization from the mountains where he's originally from to Lima all those years ago. What is it? I don't know how many years, 30 years ago, to going into his big factory work in Lima and being ostracized and fucking bullied because he was a Quechua speaker. So he prohibited Quechua speaking at home. Like my wife's grandmother, who was also her midwife, by the way, doesn't speak any Spanish at all. And her mother speaks very, very well. Her mother's now passed away. She passed away last year, bless her. Her mother didn't speak good Spanish. It was very broken. And so grandmother and mother always spoke to my wife in Quechua, always. Everything was in Quechua. But when her father entered these realms of this factory work and was being bullied and like told that Quechua was the fucking scum of the earth, and you know, like Quechua speakers were nothing, and you know, the language of prosperity was Spanish, and you know, just the same old imperialistic bullshit that is sold, you know, in the globalized movement. because of that, you know, my father-in-law was kind of felt forced to dumb it all down and like stop. He stopped my wife from speaking Quechua. So my wife now, she speaks about, you know, 60-70% Quechua. She understands very well, but in terms of articulating herself, she finds it difficult because her dad prohibited it. And you know, from that energy, from him transforming from that energy into me witnessing him in that ceremony with Hermano Vidal, like being truly fucking proud of where he comes from and who he is. Ah, beautiful, you know. And
that's healing in itself, isn't it? That is a healing. It is.
Exactly. But that's what that's it. When white man learns indigenous ways, the world will heal. And you know, I began to understand it on a totally cellular level, man.
Yeah, I don't think we've actually evolved at all. I think we've gone the complete opposite way. Actually, spiritually, I think we've actually gone down. I think the Vedas, I don't know if you've heard of it, is it the Kula Yuga or something like that? It's in the Bhagavad Gita.
Kali Yuga.
I'm a big believer in all that, in the ancient Hindu texts and stuff. And I think we've actually gone down, not up. I think we might have gone back up now.
But, you know, just like markets and whatever, given that markets are driven purely from human emotion, human emotion itself follows the same pattern, and there's only one way to go once you hit rock bottom, man. You know, there's only one fucking way, and now we are going in a fairly solid direction. And you know, there's many people that, well, myself included, like I said, we as a family, financially, spiritually, we hit fucking rock bottom, and now the vibration of our family is very, very fucking different. You know, I feel more love for my family than I've ever felt in my life. I feel more love for myself than I've ever felt in my life. I have more discipline and structure and organization in my life than I've ever had. And it's just a parallel. I am part of this rising, and so are you, brother. And so is everybody else listening to this podcast, you know, we are part of something very, very fucking significant, man.
Yeah, do you think that we've chose to be here at this time?
Yeah, absolutely. We are, we are the stewards. Our I don't want to say our generation, man, because it's multi-generational in terms of human years, you know, but this, like, it's almost like a soul family, you know, incarnated on earth at this time, to, like, you know, like fucking, we're here playing the game of life, and people like me and you, we are the medics. Like on a football pitch, the oh God, I can't even remember how many players play on a football pitch.
11. 22. rugby's 16 or something like that. Football's right. 11. Yeah.
11 per team, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, so 22 people on a football pitch playing football, and you've got the medics at, on the sidelines tending to them, making sure that they've got everything they need, making sure they're you know, as injury-free as possible, and if they sustain injuries, they help to heal them and make decisions, you know, whether they can continue or not, and basically look after their well-being. I see that as our job, you know. We are the medics of the modern world. We are the consciousness, the guardian of consciousness, for the sake of healing and evolution of our world, man. That is why we're here, you know. We've been sent as the medics, man. The medics, the healers, the inspirers, the uplifters, the anybody who is here to lift the vibration in expression of human beings.
Yeah.
Oh man, I just caught the sight of Shiva over my shoulder.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I was going to say, so when I first did ayahuasca, that the very first time I drunk, the very first night that I drunk, that was what come through, was that you're here to raise the consciousness of the planet, and that was it. It just kept repeating itself over and over again. And I just thought, well, you know what? I think most people who are starting to go into that field of work with plant medicines, I think that's more or less everybody's type of purpose, if you like, to go down that path. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the medics form medics, the healers form healers, the inspirers form inspirers, you know. It's just, the ones who are taking the steps now, they just change the vibrational pattern for for the next people to step into. You know, and it absolutely is. Yeah, it's part of the sacred cycle of life, man. Everybody is here to do exactly that. We're all here to evolve, to raise our vibrations and essentially ascend. You know, we're here gaining consciousness in order to feed. We're here with all our little craniums running around on planet Earth, gaining microcosmic consciousness, which will then feed into the macrocosmic consciousness. And once our microcosmic journeys are fully fulfilled and every single cup is filled, then we may move on to higher states and perhaps not so microcosmic and individualized. You know, we raise, we move into ascension. That's what I believe anyway. You know, I know that not everybody will agree with me, and there's probably lots of debate around the particulars and the dynamics of it, but you know, that's the way I see it, man. And as a kind of modern shamanistic person or shamanic practitioner, you know, I see it as my duty to remain as clear, clean, pure in consciousness as possible, and to essentially master, you know, shamans, like fully accomplished shamans are absolute masters of consciousness, you know, absolute masters of consciousness and energy. I've got something on my phone here that I want to read you, actually. I read it in the meeting that I had before this call, how we do this, how do we become masters of, how do we do this? How do we practice mastery of consciousness? And what is the kind of purpose in serving evolution? So is that okay if I just read this to
Please,
you?
Please, go ahead, yeah.
A true shaman knows that we humans are designed to discover and evolve through the act of creation. We are designed to encode the knowledge we gain in expressions of beauty that fully support the continuity of life, aka evolution, right? We are designed to steward the evolution of culture and of consciousness itself on a universal scale. A shaman carries the knowledge of how human perception and awareness actively work together, and embodying this knowledge, the shaman walks in full connection to the earth and all of life. Only with this full connectivity, which allows the shaman to be informed by the earth, by life and the cosmos, can the shaman step into his proper job description, leading the way in stewarding the collective well-being, innovating and evolving ways to thrive, and helping to infuse entire collectives with the power of universal love, of membership, and of momentum for further growth. This is knowledge the world sorely needs now, and it is up to the modern shaman to embody it and discover ways to apply it on our world. Simply repeating the old ways won't get us very far, but the one thing we must carry forward unchanged yet applied in new ways is the precise knowledge of how human consciousness works and its great role in the evolution of thriving life. Yeah.
Beautiful.
That's it, man.
Yeah.
I took that from the website of Marty Spiegelman, who is a modern day shaman and works with a lot of corporates. You can check her out as well. I'm probably going to go over and do some work with her at some point. But she's in the documentary Insaye on Netflix. So,
yeah.
Shout out to my man Toby Street, by the way, because it was him. It was because of his recommendation that I watched Insaye in it. Yeah. I couldn't believe it when Marty Spiegelman popped up on my screen in front of me because I'd been emailing her previously. I was like, wow. So, yeah. Cool. Thank you, Toby.
Yeah, and, you know, have you ever studied the Druidic shamanism? Druidic, like Celtic.
It's something that I have a curiosity for, but the curiosity is quite distant, ironically, because I'm Scottish, of course. But here's the thing, and I have another story to tell you as well.
How long have you got, mate? How long have you got left?
About 20 minutes.
Yeah, go for it. Great, yeah.
Is that okay, yeah? So, actually, I've got another call on after this one. But So, I've put my daughter into Gaelic school. So my daughter's learning Gaelic, and I am learning the Gaelic language through my daughter, learning songs with her and whatever, like nursery rhymes and Christmas songs and stuff. The whole Gaelic culture and Celtic culture, it is of interest to me, and I do have a curiosity for it, but I can't say that it's interestingly not as strong as people may expect it to be, given the fact that I'm Scottish. But where I do feel a much stronger calling is in the Viking, the Viking traditions. And so I said I'll tell you a story, and this story is kind of my journey so far with the Vikings. When I was in Argentina and I became interested in past life regression, I started to visit a Japanese past life regression therapist. I can't remember his name to give him a referral here, but Guillermo Masuyama. That's his name, Guillermo Masuyama. And he's based in Buenos Aires in Argentina. He's a past life regression therapist. I started to go to him, and when I went to him, okay, I didn't actually go into past lives, but what happened was I was visited by like four or five different angelic beings of light who raced towards me, like woof, came racing towards me. And I got the sensation that they were like celebrating being with me and welcoming me, almost like a man going back to his tribe, like woo, you know, beer flying everywhere. And like that was the energy. Yeah, man, that was the energy that was being emanated. And all they were in the eye of my mind were beings of light. I couldn't see human figures or anything. They were just light, and they were beings, and they were just there, and they were really happy to see me, and they were dancing around me and celebrating. And when that happened, boom, this name popped into my head, Sumapechu Granny. Now, maybe somebody who's listening has knowledge of Norwegian and ancient Norse language and can tell me what the hell Sumapechu means, because in my research, I started to research after the session with Guillermo Masuyama in Buenos Aires. I started to research these two words together. I found nothing on the two words. Then I separated them and I found nothing on Sumapechu. But when I searched for granny, I was kind of blown away, man, because granny, G-R-A-N-I, is that it was this ancient, a horse from ancient Norse mythology that was gifted by the greatest god of Norse mythology, Odin. It was gifted by Odin to Sigurd, who was an ancient Viking godlike warrior, similar to Ragnar Lothbrok, I guess. It was actually, I can't remember the name of Odin's own horse. It begins with S. I can't remember. But anyway, that his horse gave birth to this, to Grani. And Grani, by Odin, was gifted to Sigurd. And then Sigurd was a powerful motherfucker and won many, many battles on his horseback, on the back of Grani. And that's what came through to me in this meditation and this past life regression with this with Guillermo Masoyama in Buenos Aires in Argentina, 2008. And I was like, whoa, fucking hell, that's really interesting. But time passed, life started to happen, and I forgot all about it. And then during my shamanic initiation, part of my initiation training was to do a soul retrieval on myself. And so in that soul retrieval, which is essentially... when you have a piece of your soul kind of missing, which happens a lot in everyday life, you can, during a traumatic event or whatever, you leave a piece of your soul in that place, which manifests in like suppressed trauma and stuff like that. So I had to go and kind of recuperate this piece of my soul in this shamanic therapy that I was giving to myself as part of my initiation. And I was taken into a past life where, just like when I was in Buenos Aires and that white witch woman told me that I had been a Viking and I had crossed the seas of the north one of the women that I was staying with back then. She'd give me some accommodation and I was staying in her house. So with her, I crossed the northern seas as a Viking. And fucking strangely enough, man, as well, crazy, but I was doing this like a... kind of what would we call it, capacitation, kind of like a project that was spread out throughout Latin America by Cuba in order to eliminate illiteracy. I was working on this project and I have a naturally kind of big energy, kind of high level of energy, and I'm quite expressive. And because of that, like, everybody just started to call me El Vikingo, which means the Viking. And I hadn't even spoken of fucking anything, granny. I didn't see why I should, you know. They would probably think I was a fucking weirdo, like, you know. You know what I mean? So in this soul retrieval that I gave myself, I was taken back to this life that I lived as a Norseman crossing the seas of the north, probably somewhere to the north of Iceland. And I lost my life at sea because of treacherous weather and the boat sinking. I never lost my life in battle in that life. I lost my life at sea. And at the bottom of the sea, that's where I found the peace of my soul. And that happened. And then life began to unfold again. And I forgot all about it. Blah, blah, blah. You know. And then, you know, in the last... well, obviously, I've been in the world of business for 4 years now, and as part of that process unfolding, I am introduced to a guy called Francis Dolly, who I did some property training with down in Bristol. I was introduced by him to this woman in Edinburgh who was from Iceland and wanted some advice on being able to invest in property without being mortgageable. So I was like, okay, I know strategies to do that. Let's meet, let's have a chat, I'll give you some advice. We met for a coffee. Andrea Olafs is her name. We hit it off, man, over the coffee. We proper hit it off and got on really well. And within half an hour after the meeting, she was calling me saying, hey, man, you see this deal, this property here, like, I think we could make a deal from that, you know. 30 minutes after the coffee. Like, okay, so this is happening. All right, we are moving into business together. All right. I started to research her. Okay, I started, obviously, like, you know, the process of business, whoever you come into contact with that you're going to do business with, you want to know a little bit about. So you start doing a little bit of what we call due diligence and researching her. And I realized, fucking hell, this woman has held a pretty fucking significant role in her society. She ran for president of Iceland.
Nice.
Okay. Yeah, she ran for president of Iceland, and she had a big part to do with the whole fucking, you know, bringing down the... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All that stuff. She was very involved in that, and that was how she, you know, her journey unfolded with her presidential campaign and stuff. And then when it came to the time that we had to form the company, it was like, well, what are we going to call ourselves? And then instantly, we kept kind of joking with each other way before we were thinking about forming a company. There was always jokes in the air around Vikings because she saw me as kind of Viking-like, and I'm saying, well, she's an Icelander, so she's a fucking Viking, you know. And we were just like joking. There was jokes in the air of a Viking nature, let's just say. And so when the time to form the company came, she said, you know, what we're going to call the company? And I was like, oh, boom, Viking, Granny. It came back to me, Granny. And I started to do research on Granny again and the story of it and whatever. So we came up with three options. We're going to call it Granny, we're going to call it Sigurd, or we're going to call it Odin. One of those three. Odin is the biggest god of Norse mythology. Sigurd is the warrior that I told you about, and Granny is the horse who helped win many battles for Sigurd. And so eventually we came to the conclusion that it was going to be Odin. So our business is Odin Holdings, all tied in with that story. And she goes to Iceland over Christmas to be with her family, and she's texting me on Messenger, saying, yeah, I'm in a lovely hot spa in minus 13 temperatures here in Iceland, la la la. But in this process, what's interesting is my father has opened up to me whilst we're in these kind of, you know, in this kind of family-oriented environment. My father began to open up to me and said that he spent 2017 tracing our family DNA, and he's traced it all the way back to Sigurd. I'm like, what? Okay. That's very fucking interesting. Very, very, very interesting. And then I started to feel like a kind of, that's where I really started to feel a high level of curiosity for the Viking culture.
Yeah.
And we started to watch, with my wife, I started to watch the series Vikings on Amazon Prime. And we'd only got to two episodes in. And I'm still quite ignorant of, at this point, I'm still quite ignorant of, well, I still today, I'm quite ignorant of many things in the Viking cultures and whatever, but I didn't know yet anything of ravens and crows and whatever. I didn't know anything, how they tied in with Viking culture. But after the second episode of Vikings, right, and no crows were involved in the first two episodes, there was nothing there. After the first two episodes, like in my morning routines, I sit down for meditation and this fucking crow, this raven, pops up, and I'm like, okay, hello Raven, nice to see you, you know, thank you for coming. And I decide, I make a conscious decision inside myself, this Raven has something to say to me. If I want to communicate with it properly, then I have to journey, shamanically journey, which takes energy, and right now I'm on my cushion in a process of preservation of energy, and I don't want to expend any energy, so thank you for coming, Raven. You know, and I acknowledge you, nothing else. Then I was given some kind of a vision of myself when I moved to Brazil, which is going to happen in the next few years, adopting a raven as a pet in that house in Brazil. That's what so I was just shown that in that meditation. And then boom, that night we watched the third episode of Vikings, and that episode of Vikings finishes with with Ragnar Lothbrok, who is divinely and directly connected to Odin. It finishes with him, or in that episode, he is like, he receives this poof gaze from a raven who sends him a message, who just sends him a signal directly from Odin through a raven. And in that moment, like when that clicked in, I was like, whoa, 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 that's clicking for me too. And then that episode of Vikings ends with Ragnar Lothbrok with a fucking raven on his shoulder. I'm like, what? Okay, cool. And then I started to read up a little bit on a little bit more on Norse mythology, and in Norse mythology, Odin used to walk around with two ravens on his shoulder, you know. And so, fuck man, we went for a board meeting to Andrea's house, which is where I had a Skype call with you one time, my brother. Went to her house, And I told her all of this stuff, and she's very open to this, you know. We were on a business trip in Spain, like with our fucking bare feet and hands up against the property, praying to the universe that this manifest as our property.
Get it, man.
She gets it, man. You know, she gets it. And so I just went to her house and I told her all of this, and she was like, "Well, you know what, man? My husband, who was there with us, he says my she said my husband, his name Hrafn, it is Icelandic for raven." I'm just like, fucking whoa. So yeah, that is I'm not, you know, that was a bit of a long way to answer your question as to whether or not I'm into druidry and Celtic shamanism. Mildly, you know, but as you can see, I'm much more inclined to kind of towards Viking traditions. Yeah.
So very quickly, all this, how does this fit into the crypto world that you fell into and into the property world, all this stuff that you've sort of, from 11 years old to 20 years old, for example, you've gone through this journey and whatever else, and then all of a sudden you've sort of fell into crypto and business. How does that sort of fit together now?
Well, it's part of the elevation of my expression in the world. You know, we are currently in a world that is kind of dominated by money, logical thinking, and big business. You know, it's we are in a world that's dominated by big business, and in order for people who wish to, it is my view that people who really wish to make a fucking significant change in this world need to go through that system and rise above it in vibration, in order to drag all of the shit from the system into a higher state of vibration. And I can see, okay, there was a lot of elements in me getting into bigger business pursuits, mainly providing as a father and a family man, you know, that was a primal fucking drive in it, of course. But also, like I said, I didn't want to let go of my dreams, and I felt a huge purpose. And part of that purpose is, you know, to raise the world up into higher states of expression and vibration. And I truly believe, you know, I mean, I never really thought about this much in that process, but you're asking me the question now, and I can see it in my head happening. I do believe that we must, it's cool if we want to go barefoot and wear rainbow trousers and dreadlocks and go and fucking camp out in a jungle somewhere, you know, we just might not have as big a positive footprint on the fucking world if we do that, because all we're doing is separating ourselves and creating separatism. My view, I know some people are happy in their jungle houses and whatever, and I fully respect them, and I believe that vibrationally they are doing work because they're meditating for a better world. Definitely, you know. Yeah. But my place where I feel the biggest contribution from me is to go, and from many other people, yourself included, is to go through that system. Yeah. whilst they're out in the jungle and their tree houses and whatever, like kind of taking care of their vibration and meditating to take care of us vibrationally, we are in the shit, we are in the middle of it, and that's what I said, we are the medics, the healers, we are working through it to raise it into higher vibrations. And on crypto, I do believe that cryptocurrency is a higher vibrational expression of the essence and act of exchange, and it is one step forward in our vibrational evolution as a race. Because freedom, you know, me and you are gaining freedom, kind of in, so to speak, the hard way, because we really are dragging ourselves through the shit, through the system, you know. Crypto, we are pioneering crypto now, and crypto is the future of exchange. You know, crypto is that, I believe it, is that higher vibrational expression of exchange, and it's going to create a world that people will be born into. So people will be born not without freedom, but with their freedom, because they will be fully independent over their acts of exchange.
Not monopolized on anything, no.
Exactly, and not controlled externally, you know? Like, we are creating this freedom through, you know, our pursuits in the world of business, but the actual, you know, fiat currency is the underlying kind of, like, economics and dynamics of fiat currency. We actually don't have that much control over, because it is purely controlled by fucking reserve banks, you know? Bankers, essentially. Might want to replace that B at the start of the word with a W, but anyway.
One and the same, isn't they? One and the same thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Cool.
Is there anything else you want to get out, mate, before we close it up?
No, I think, yeah, we've covered quite a lot, man. I just, you know, 2017 was a real turning point for me in the whole vibration. It was where I really kind of came to the end of my period of like suffering and struggle. In 2018, there is just this huge heartfelt energy bursting through me to help people, you know, to really help people and to act in my role of consciousness medic, healer, you know, coach, inspirer, whatever. So, you know, anybody listening to this, I don't have a personal website yet. It's going to come at some point this year, yes. You know, Alex, if you can somehow connect people with me, if they vibe with me, if you like what I've said, if you like my chat, and you feel like I might be able to help you with some new perspective, please fucking reach out, man. Because this heart is pumping for humanity, man, and I want to help you. You know,
top man. You're just on Facebook, yeah? Just go through to Facebook and add you and message you through there, yeah.
Yeah, for now, man. Like I said, there will be a website coming. I'm going through some coaching with some people, and people are giving me a hand to just get myself kind of crystal clear on how it's all going to happen, and how I'll get myself set up to just like really deliver myself and all my gifts to the world, because I have a lot to give, man. And like I said, this heart is pumping big time for humanity and for you, for everybody that's listening, man. Like, I love you all with my heart, man. You know,
Mark, you're a legend. Top man.
Love you, man.
Big love, brother. Take it easy.
Cheers. Likewise. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Blessing.